This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. Every other week, I'll be posing sex questions, busting sex myths, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. But in order to do this, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Hello, and welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite, and I'm joined, as ever, by accredited sex and relationship therapist, Kate Campbell. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
How are you today, Mum?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very, very good. I realised that, like, on most podcasts, they just go, you're all right, and they have a little chat. Mm. And they go, you know, and they just talk about their weeks. I never ask you how you are. It's always our guests that have to. Do I?
Yeah, I don't ask you how you are.
Oh, well, I'm very glad that you've asked me, because usually I think we just dive straight in and we're like, right, today we're talking about bisexuals. Mum, what is it? Which is now what I'm going to do.
Is it raining? Just a minute. Hang on.
I forgot you got your bloody window open. This is terrible news. Oh my God.
I'm really sorry, but if it starts to rain, I've got to go and bring my chairs in.
Yeah, I do like this. The number of times, Mum will be like, right, I am desperate to dry my clothes the proper way. I'm going to hang them up outside and I'm going to dry them outside. And I'll look outside and I'll be like, it's just cloud out there. But you're like, no, I'm going to put them up out there. And you'll be out somewhere and you'll text me and you'll go, Diggs, it's raining. Take this time.
When's the last time that happened?
Well, not long ago, because, I've moved out for 3 years. That's probably why.
Right. Okay. But the sun's come out. That's nice. But the worm washing line fell down. So I haven't been doing that.
That's true. Yeah. Yes. It fell down.
So, yes, I've been having to hang washing off a tree since then. So you still
are sticking out with the, despite the dryer and stuff, you are sticking with the whole.
Well, now we're being more careful with energy, aren't we? Both for the planet and for the incredibly high energy bills.
Quite right, Mum. Quite right. What do you think about podcasts that spend ages like chatting at the beginning and don't get to it?
Well, that's often the best bit, isn't it?
Well, it's really, because sometimes it is, and then sometimes sometimes I listen to it and I'm like, guys, I've seen the title. When are we going to get to the bit about bisexuals?
When are we going to get to the bit about bisexuals and stop talking about rain and
your washing line?
And your washing. Well, we could start playing It's Raining Men. That would kind of be.
I think we're going to get a copyright strike if we do that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, you know, listen, if you're happy to pay the fees, we'll do it.
Well, no, I'm not.
Okay. So the other day we were talking and I apologise, as I always do, because we start talking, you say something that sounds interesting and I say, Mum, don't talk to me about that. Save it for the podcast. And obviously, as it's you, half the stuff you say, I think, hang on a minute, that's genius. Save that for the podcast.
Oh, well, you don't. So you say you don't believe it. Whatever I say, you fact checked everything.
I am literally that Twitter account. What was it? Fact Check UK. And I do fact check everything that you say.
Yeah.
But something you said the other day, which I found really, really interesting, and you started talking about it, and now I want you to explain it in more detail. And that's why we're going to be talking about bisexual people today, because you were saying that when you have a client, in that first session, you ask them a few questions about themselves, including things like, how do you identify in your gender, in yourself? And also, how do you identify in your sexual orientation? Is that right? Questions like that?
Well, I mean, it comes up, not always in the first session, and not always, what's your gender identity? Because that's...
Right. It's not appropriate. It depends on the situation.
Well, it depends on the situation, yeah. Because sometimes people have already said... But if it's sex therapy, then I absolutely would, yes. Mm. But for people, even when it's not sex therapy, I do tend to ask how they identify sexually. Mm. And what I've found is that when you ask that question, sometimes people go away and think about it. Sometimes people answer immediately, they know. And it's not always the answer you're expecting, but quite often they'll go away and think about it and they'll come back and say, you know, I've been thinking about it and I think I'm bisexual. That happens a lot.
Yes.
That's what I said that I think you were interested in, right?
That's exactly it. Because, I mean, I can't remember what the statistics are on this as well. I seem to remember something like 10% of people are gay or bisexual, which I remember blew my mind because when I was a kid, I used to think it was obviously 50-50. That just made so much more sense to me that it would be 50% people were gay and 50% people were straight. I didn't realise that bisexual was a thing, all that sort of stuff. But whatever the statistics are, it's interesting that you say that a lot of people do, at least in this setting where, you know, they're meant to be completely honest and open, and they can be because you're impartial. They will say, yeah, I'm bisexual. Yeah. So just so we know, what is bisexuality?
Well, it's really interesting. Bisexuality is interest in difference and the same, if you like. So you are interested in somebody who is not your gender and who is your gender. So you're sexually attracted to both.
Yeah.
So as opposed to pansexuality, which takes in every possibility, we're probably, with bisexuality, talking more about binary genders. But not everybody agrees. Other people would say it's exactly the same thing as pansexuality. Mm. It just depends who you are. So there will be different definitions depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah.
But generally, traditionally, it's been the same and different.
Yeah, exactly. So that was something I was going to ask about, because I guess for some people, that's the issue that they've got here. Because when I was growing up, so I only knew bisexuality. I thought you were either gay, you were straight, or you were bisexual. And that was basically it. Mm. And I think that was the case for a lot of people. And so they identify now as bisexual because that was the term that was used at the time that made sense to them. Now that we have the term pansexual, and they still use bisexual, some people use that almost as a stick to beat them with, because they're like, oh, you're bisexual, you're not pansexual, you don't like trans people. But as we say, that I think comes down to semantics, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are people who disagree, but yeah, I guess. But yeah, I mean, people do beat people up for being bisexual as well. I mean, they don't literally beat them up, but they say you should, and people beat themselves up as well. You shouldn't sit on the fence. And quite often people are treated as if it's a phase they're going through and they're going to grow out of it. And but when you think about it, it's much more likely that people will be bisexual than straight, if you think about it, I know there are people that would argue with that and say it's natural to be attracted to the opposite gender. But why is it? Because historically, that hasn't always been the case. And we didn't have all these labels like gay and straight and stuff. At one time, people just, you know, were attracted to people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've written all these questions. You're almost rifling through the answers already.
I'm so sorry.
But this is some of the things that people say with bisexuality. Is it a phase? You know, it's always the classic thing of girls exploring their sexuality or boys at boarding school, that sort of thing. And it's like, maybe it's just a phase before you get back to the, you know, what you're supposed to, the straight and narrow, or you choose a side and you choose gay or straight. So some people say that, and you're going to come down one way or the other.
But that makes an interesting point, doesn't it? Because if you're at boarding school and you're interested in sex and there's nobody but your own sex around and you have sex with them, then that just goes to show how fluid people are, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Because if you were really, really, really straight, you wouldn't do that.
Exactly.
So it's not that it's a phase that you're going through, the interest in the opposite person. It's lack of opportunity. You know, it's what the, or lots of opportunities, what the opportunity is. And here's the opportunity, boys, if it's boys, or girls, if it's girls, you know, it's you take what you can get, don't you?
Well, this is quite a big philosophical question then, is do you think that we are all born bisexual / pansexual, and it's only our nurture and nature that makes us anything different?
I think that's very possible, isn't it? I mean, it's very, very possible. I know when I was growing up, everyone was very jokey about being gay, and it was kind of not okay. It was very definitely not okay. So I think I've been brought up with the kind of idea, oh, well, you can't be that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That was definitely the idea at the time.
Yeah, is, you know, due to all sorts of factors. I mean, the part of the reason for that is we are in I think we can safely still say we are still in a heteronormative society. Mm. That meaning that the society through, and we're talking from law down to, you know, politics, schooling, all these sorts of things, they are focused on the nuclear family and they are focused on heterosexual relationships, first and foremost. That's why when you do sexual education at school, it's like, right, how do men and women make a baby? Rather than, you know,
stuff about relationships.
Exactly. And you can see different types of relationships, gay, lesbian,
although some schools are better than, I mean, some schools are really great about it and
absolutely, you know,
and do a really good job, but some aren't so good.
And it even comes down to our culture and our TV shows. Obviously, we're getting better now. We've got some great stuff out there, some great TV shows coming through. But I imagine, like when you were, like you were talking about before, when you were growing up, and I think when I was growing up, these things weren't seen on screen. And I always come back to this. The number of people we've had on this podcast, and we said, how was your sex education? And they go, oh, I never saw myself on screen, so I didn't feel represented, or I didn't feel like I could. Or, you know, this is how I thought relationships went because of what I saw on TV. It has such an effect on us we don't realise. So that's this heteronormative society we're talking about when we talk about that. And that's why things like bisexuality come often with that level of, oh, is this just a phase? People going, come down on one difficulty, exactly, in the individual and others experiencing.
But I mean, it's not just straight people who tell bisexual people that they should or give the idea that there's something wrong with being bisexual. I mean, some gay people do it as well. You know, say, come on, you know, be one thing or the other. You're really gay, aren't you? And things like that. I mean, you know, that anybody can judge, and people do.
And people do. I mean, this is something that I think is interesting that people might want to hear about. Because as I always do, I look up this stuff on Google and see what people on Google are asking. And one of the things that comes up, one of the terms that comes up is bisexual, but with a preference. And I think there is a word for this. So bisexual, but heteroromantic, meaning essentially that you are bisexual. You are sexually attracted to two genders, male and female. However, you would only really consider dating or being romantic with your opposite gender if you are bisexual but heteroromantic.
And that quite often changes too.
And that, I'm sure
it would. And a lot of people do that until they've got kids, and then they change.
And then they are fully bisexual.
Or gay,
Right, gotcha. Because, I know someone personally who is bisexual but lesbian romantic. She can't see herself dating a guy.
Yeah.
She finds him hot. But she can't see herself dating one, but she can and does date women.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's really, really understandable, isn't it, when you think about
It's very understandable. I'm a straight guy. It's very understandable for me. I'm like, I can look at guys and be like, he's fit or whatever. But I understand that. There's something about me that wants to date women that I guess I am heteroromantic and heterosexual, which is a bit boring and annoying, but there you go. But I wonder whether with people like that, because I think some people hear that, oh, you're bisexual but heteroromantic, and I think they think, I'll pick a side for God's sake, because it's like, oh, you're going to be heteroromantic. What, so you're going to be heterosexual like everyone else in this heteronormative society, but you're going to be bisexual on the side. You're going to have fun with girls or boys when it makes sense to you. And I think, again, that adds to this thing where people
Yeah, I think there's a thing too. I mean, we're both straight, so I think it makes it more difficult to have these conversations. I feel really uncomfortable even just saying other people say this, because it's so horrible. I've seen what it's like for people on the receiving end, and it's not something that you think about if it doesn't apply to you. I mean, if you've thought about it and you've thought, yeah, okay, I am straight, then an awful lot of problems are taken away immediately. I mean, you don't have to, then you can just stop thinking. Whereas for people who are not binary in some direction, then it's more complicated, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's much more complicated. And I tell you what pisses me off more than anything.
Bring the heat, Mum.
Well, it's when people say things like, well, it doesn't bother me what people are. I don't know why they're worried about it. I'm okay with whatever they do. And, you know, it's them and what they do. And, you know, I'm not bothered by them. Oh, thanks for allowing it, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm always
scared.
Glad
we got your green light.
Yeah. And I'm always scared if you're straight and you're talking about something that isn't directly within your experience, that other people are, that you're going to get it wrong. And I mean, it really, really worries me getting it wrong.
Of course.
And upsetting somebody, because it's so easy to do. So people, and so the microaggressions, you know, when you say, oh, I don't mind them, the minute you've said that, you've just You've just really insulted people.
This is my least favourite word in this whole discourse. Tolerance and tolerant.
Oh, God. Absolutely.
I tolerate that. I tolerate it. Absolutely, yeah. I tolerate it. What does that mean?
How bloody dare you?
It sounds like you're at a dinner and there's an annoying kid at another table and someone's like, oh, we should complain about the kid. And you go, no, come on, just tolerate it. That's what it sounds like. So don't ever use the word I'm blah, blah, tolerant, or I'm tolerant of this.
Exactly.
Horrible, horrible word.
Horrible.
But obviously, yeah, it's difficult to talk about this sort of thing.
There are
going
to be headlines now saying, Kane Diggs, don't tolerate gay sex.
Don't tolerate this. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Intolerant of gay sex.
But I think that brings up an interesting thing because, you know, I've just mentioned bisexual, we mentioned pansexual, we mentioned heteroromantic, lesbian romantic, all that sort of stuff.
Mm.
Is there a need for labels?
No. No.
And there never used to be.
No. Well, right. Okay. So some people, if you want to feel that you're part of a community and if you want support for the way you are, then a label can be really, really helpful. Any kind of label can be really, you know, it's like if you've got a bad knee and you don't know why you've got a bad knee and you go to the doctor and they say, oh, you've got so-and-so. And you go, oh, I've got bad knee syndrome. Okay, I know what it is now and I can feel better about it.
And then you go around going, I've got bad knee syndrome. And that's how you present yourself.
Well, you might meet other people with a bad knee and you might be able to go, how did you make your knee feel better? And they'll say, oh, I rubbed it or I put heat on it or whatever. And
then
While I'm talking to you, I'm rubbing my knee, which isn't bad. But anyway, but you know what I mean? That if you feel part of, stop laughing.
Yeah,
if you feel part of a community, then that can be great. But on the other hand, is there any need for a label? Because people are the way they are. People are just people. And why do we have to put labels on things? Because the minute you start putting people into discrete groups, then they start to take against one another.
Well, and also, I suppose, by putting someone in a group, if someone comes up to you and goes, hey, I'm this, then you go, well, what do I know about those things? And you think about all the stereotypes that you think about them and all that sort of stuff, and then you start to put them in a box. And also, similarly, if you identify with a certain label, you might then start to put yourself in whatever box you think fits that label. However, I think labels, it's really tough with labels, because like you say, they can be so pressurizing, like we've just talked about, for those two reasons. But I think they're very helpful in identifying. And I'll give you an example. What we were talking about earlier, I remember Jess, who was on the podcast, obviously did two bonus episodes with us. Wonderful Jess, your daughter, my sister, told me once, she was like, you know, she said, listen, mate, when we were kids, she was like, we're bisexual until proven gay or straight or otherwise. And I said, that is genius. I loved it. I thought, yeah, of course, we're all born bi. Probably now I'd say we're all born pan. And, you know, whatever. So I went off to uni being like, well, hey, put on my uniform, I'm bisexual, went into uni, told everyone I was bisexual, to prove straight or gay. Now, this wasn't an issue. However, in reality and in truth, you know, let's say when I go to a nightclub or whatever, you know, I'm not looking at any guys. I will look at a girl and go, wow, she's really beautiful, whatever, all that sort of stuff. Unfortunately, I think I am straight. So, but whilst I was going around at uni being like to everyone, I'm bisexual until proven straight or gay or otherwise, some gay men that I was friends with would, you know, try and
would flirt with you, would be interested in you.
And sometimes to the point where, so then when I would say, oh no, they, like, some people were not happy. They felt like friends of theirs had lied to them because I'd been telling their friends, oh, you know, I'm bi. And they thought, oh yeah, well, green light, go ahead. That sort of thing. I do think it's helpful in identifying.
How old were you then? I mean, you were 18 when you went to university.
That's,
and you were
not
still
that young.
Saying,
that's not that young.
No, it's
that's
not.
That's what
that,
I mean. Yeah,
no,
I'm sorry. I thought you were about to let me off the hook.
No, you were old enough to know better. You should have been over that. You should not have been running around showing off, going, I'm, you know. Can you imagine?
I know.
No wonder they were cross with you. I don't blame them.
Exactly. But this is what I'm saying. And I think sometimes it's just helpful, isn't it? I'm Digory, I'm straight. Brilliant. We all know where we are. I'm Digory, I'm gay. Brilliant. We all know where we are. Do you know what I mean? So I do think, and also it's that sense of...
That's the other thing that pisses me off. That is the other thing. Everybody was assumed to be straight until proved otherwise in the olden days, right? And so people now complain that they can't tell because there are so many people who aren't straight. Because in the olden days, if somebody wasn't straight, they would still pretend they were and say, say you approached a gay woman and you were a man and you said, oh, will you come out with me for a nice cup of coffee? And they'd go, oh, no, sorry, I have a boyfriend, instead of, no, I don't like dick, or whatever.
That is from an accredited sex and relationship therapist. If you are a lesbian woman and you want to know how to get rid of a man for hitting on you,
please
just
don't say this.
Just lower your voice and go, no, I don't like dick.
Don't, that's so offensive, Diggory.
You said it. Just said it.
Bloody hell, I didn't mean it like that.
You tie yourself up in knots.
Oh, my God, I've just been offended so many people. I'm so sorry, I apologise.
That? That's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
I'm offended, so I'm assuming other people are as well.
I think it's bloody hilarious.
I didn't mean to cause offence. But you know what I mean, though? Why should you have to have a big flipping signpost on somebody that says, I'm this or that? Why can't you just get to know somebody and see if they're attracted to you? Because, you might be straight. You might be 100% straight, Diggs, and up might come, Superman, and you might suddenly go, oh, my God, I love
you. Now, listen, I am not closed off to that in myself. There is absolutely no chance. I've thought about it enough that I think if the right person came along and I was looking at them the same way I was looking at girls, absolutely, I'd jump into that with both hands. But I just suppose for now, it's with both hands. Hands first, head first. Don't know what that means. I jump into it with my hands.
Both
okay.
Feet.
So you're right. And there's no way I'm closing off that. But for now, it's a useful shorthand for me. And can I make one final point on this? Just because, like you said before, about building communities, sense of identity. That's why it's called pride. I am proud to be a gay man. And there's something about me being a man. That's the gender I am. And me being with other men, the gender they are. And I am proud of that. And that, I find that beautiful, and I love that. And I think that is something that, yes, labels do have this terrible downside, but then you have that upside. And I think that's really nice as well. So it's a really interesting debate. But
so we're on the fence.
Yeah. Let's go on the fence. Brilliant. Yeah.
That's what we'll label ourselves. We're on the fence about this.
Perfect. Fine. All right. Brilliant. Mum, I've got some Google questions for you.
Ooh.
Just to finish this off, because we've been talking about bisexuality for us. Yes. These are questions that people look up on Google. Some of the most, we've got two here. These are Google's most asked questions about bisexuality. We've actually covered most of them because most of them make sense. But these are two that I just want to get your thoughts on. Okay. Here's number one. Can bisexual people get pregnant?
Oh, yes. Why on earth couldn't they?
Thank you. Yeah, that is one of Google's most commonly asked questions for bisexual people. Mum, I don't make the rules, baby. Bisexual people get pregnant? That is really high up there. That is really high up there.
Wow.
So just to confirm, everyone, yes, bisexual people can get pregnant. As long as they have the right tools within them, they can.
Well, yes, and they have some sperm,
Yeah,
but as long as they've
exactly.
got some sperm, an egg and some sperm, sperm and some egg.
They're good to go.
Good to go.
Second and final question for this Google questions. Can bisexual people marry?
Yes. And they do. Very often they do. Of course they do. And otherwise I wouldn't be asking people, how do you identify? Because this is what happens to bisexual people quite often. You look at who they're with. If it's a girl with a girl, you say
yes.
gay girl. If it's a girl with a boy, you say straight couple.
Yeah.
And you know what?
And their identity is invisible.
And their identity is completely lost. Yeah, invisible.
What they need is a badge.
Diggs! No.
No, I'm only kidding. But that's the thing. And I think do correct me if I'm wrong, but what you're trying to say here is this is part of the heteronormative society we live in, and we need to rid ourselves of looking at people and going, they're straight.
And that's why.
Or they're gay. And we assume, ask the questions, but until then, they are bisexual pan, we'd have to imagine. Or we don't even imagine what their sexuality is at all.
Don't imagine anything.
You're right. Sorry, I'm trying to label them again.
Know.
I can't help
Stop it.
Yeah.
You don't know what people are until you know. And anyway, what they tell you today might not be what they tell you tomorrow, and they might change their minds.
Flexibility is a whole part of it. Yeah, exactly. Wonderful. Okay, I feel like I've come a long way.
You're flexisexual.
I think that is actually a thing.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, have a bite on this, you flexitarians. We'll be back with your questions and more after that riveting chat in part two, right after this.
Mm-hmm. This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
It's the mailbag, send Kate your queries, twopodcasts@hatch.com. It's the mailbag, send Kate your queries, podcasts@hatchwithtwocs.
Hello there, I have a query for Kate. I would like to know when the real sex education mailbag starts.
The real sex education mailbag starts right now.
Thank you.
Welcome back to part two of The Real Sex Education, where we open our mailbag. This is your chance to have your sex and relationship questions and conundrums answered by Kate, an accredited sex and relationships therapist. If you have a question, you can send it in to us on Twitter or Instagram. We're at Real Sex Ed Pod, or email us. We're podcast@hatcher.com, and we'll keep your anonymity safe. Is that the quickest I've ever read that out?
You read that really, really, really fast.
Yeah. I mean, there's one podcast I listen to where the guy just says things way too quickly, and it's actually quite annoying. Maybe I should actually go through and do that again. But I won't, because I think it's quite impressive. If you want to find out how to email us, just check the bloody bio of the episode. All right, Mum. First question. Are you ready?
Potty mouth.
Sorry. Hi, Kate and Diggory. Mm-hmm. My problem is that I have recently gone off sex with my partner, though he is kind and supportive and has been very understanding about this. If anything, he is too nice. Is it possible that I could just be one of those people who prefers bad boys? My sex life started not so well when a boy went too far when I was 15. I got over that and have had a very active and enjoyable sex life until now. I thought I loved my boyfriend, but since we moved in together, the spark has gone and I almost find his love irritating. Do you think there is any hope for us? Thank you.
Ooh, interesting.
Initial thoughts.
Well, there are a couple of clues in there, really.
Okay.
Which is
clues,
yes,
Sherlock Holmes, okay.
About what might be going. Yeah, well, you've got to look for them, haven't you?
Absolutely,
so,
you're quite right.
It's quite common for people to find that their relationship changes when they move in together, and we've had this conversation before, haven't we? Where
a lot.
Where
yeah.
Once you get over the honeymoon period, once you commit, the hormones switch off, and you feel differently, particularly about sex. And once you've committed to somebody, they become much, much, much more important. And so once they're more important, there's more to lose, and you may be frightened of getting too close to them because they might find you out, or you there's more to lose, and you don't want to be too close in case you lose them and you're on your own. There's all of that going on, and sometimes people worry about being taken over by somebody and being kind of subsumed into them. And there's a little bit of a clue that might be the case here, because she says he's too nice, almost too nice, right? So there's that. She also says she had a bad first experience. So there's sexual abuse in there. And there's a lot of research, and I hate to label people in this way, but there is a lot of research and also a lot of anecdotal evidence that people who have been sexually abused tend to go off and sort of prove to themselves that they haven't been ruined by it, that they can have a lovely sex life and they can be swinging from the chandeliers and having a great time. And that generally works really, really well until the point where they fall in love. And at that point, then it becomes difficult, because the person who abused them is quite often someone they trusted. And so then they really, really trust this person, and it triggers all those feelings about what happened to them in the past. And so it's this person's situation is 100% normal. It's normal to feel this way when you've been through those experiences. And you don't have to believe that you've gone off your partner or that there's no hope for you. But I would seriously, strongly advise some sort of work on abuse. Now, the reason that a lot of people don't do any work on their abuse is because they're frightened that they're going to have to repeat the same old story over and over and over again, and that will be too awful and they won't be able to do it. But in fact, with modern trauma therapy like EMDR, that's not what happens. You have to go there a bit, but it's quick, it's effective. And now more and more and more and more sex therapists are using EMDR before people start the actual therapy. So they're using it to deal with this sort of thing. And then they deal with putting the sex life back together if that's needed. So I think what this person's experiencing is normal. Yes, there is lots and lots and lots of hope for you. I would talk to someone about it. I'd talk to a sex therapist or a trauma therapist and see what you can do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was obviously that came because I sort of thought, well, we've got that first bit of the paragraph and then you've got the second bit of the second paragraph, which all makes sense. Mm. And you just have that line in there, you know, just that line is so important. Mm. That adds that context because it's clearly on the mind, you know, because, you know, when it says I got over it, I'm not obviously, you know, I don't know, but it's the kind of thing where you're like, well, if you got over it, you might not bring it up now. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, that sort of thing probably never goes away. It's about coping rather than getting over it. But you know, I don't know.
Well, a lot of people, very, very, very understandably, do not want to think that they continue to be affected by a bad thing that happened to them. And they don't want to admit it, and they don't to themselves. And that's one of the reasons why they may have such a great sex life, because they're kind of saying, hey, look, I'm doing all right. So I would understand it if this person said, no, that's all a load of rubbish. But it may not be. It's definitely something to explore.
So let me ask this question then. We talked about before what can happen if you do move in together and the effect that can have. You might be having less sex because now you're so close, you're worried about getting any closer.
Usually unconscious. You're usually not sort of consciously aware that's what's going on.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, yeah, yeah. But that might be the reason why. Mm. And similarly, the reason might be why you're like, oh, I don't want to have sex with them because I feel constricted by you now. And I, funny enough, was reading a book this morning. I don't know if you know this book.
It's called
The Relate Guide to Sex and Intimacy by Kate Campbell. Mm. Whatever happened to her? Mm. And there's a couple of lines, there's paragraphs, there's whole pages on this about almost how to keep your relationship going. And one of the big issues and one of the big stumbling and one of the big hurdles is moving in together.
Yeah.
And you talk in the book about, you know, your old life freedoms. Sometimes you can feel like they've gone, and distance, when you sometimes long distance relationships, you know, the heart grows fond, all that sort of stuff. You can't wait to have the same postcode or the same address. Mm. And then once you get there, all the things that you could overlook, you know, the small little things in the honeymoon period, now they become amplified. Are they blaming the relationship rather than the circumstances here? Do they just need some space and some time apart?
Yeah, people do that all the time. They blame, they think, and it is true of, you know, periods in your life which go badly. The one thing, particularly if you've had lots of upheaval and catastrophes, the one stable thing is often the relationship. And so the relationship gets blamed because that's been there throughout all these awful things. Whereas what you should be thinking is, hey, it's been there throughout, which means it's strong and stable, it caused it.
Come on now.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
It is. But it's true. It's so true.
Yeah, but also it's true. Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's
yeah.
not the way people look at it. They say, oh, you know, the relationship, oh, it's used to be like this. And of course, when I'm always saying this as well, when you go on a date, you know you're going to have sex. You know, chances are if you go on a date, you'll think, well, all right, Diggs, not you. But, you know, he would never do that. Gentle listener. but.
Oh, that's good. That really hurt my feelings. Okay, sorry, go on.
Well, you were just making a face, like a skeptical face. Yeah.
But what you mean is when you say your partner's invited you out, they say, oh, let's go out for dinner and drinks. And like, maybe we'll come back to mine and watch film afterwards.
Yeah. And so you
can
think,
naturally
there's a chance. And if you've done that a few times before, you probably think, oh, we're on a date, so chances are we'll have sex of some description on this date. And so you probably would have a shower and change your underwear. I hope you would. And and you'd, you know, shave your legs and put your pretty knickers on and things like that.
However you feel comfortable and sexy.
Yeah, that makes you feel good about yourself. Right, you're not doing that when you're living with somebody. You can't be constantly running off and having a shower and shaving your legs, can you? I mean, it's impossible. You're living your normal life where you're not at your best the whole time. And so because you haven't got yourself in that sexy frame of mind, you're not ready for sex when your partner is. Maybe your partner's constantly ready for sex and comes and appears when you're just lifting a casserole out of the oven and you say, Oh, right. I'm cooking,
this
you
is
know.
Happening, isn't
I'm
it?
All
yeah.
hot and sweaty, and I'm, you know, actually take your hands off my bum. And,
yeah, yeah.
Right. So you timing is difficult. You're closer. If you spend a lot of time together, if you spend long periods together, you become like brother and sister. The worst thing, and I'm always saying this as well, sex therapists do not like couples who come in and say, oh, we're soulmates, because soulmates don't have sex. Soulmates have to be the same, don't they? Because they're soulmates. And if there's no difference, there's no attraction. What do you, you may as well just have solo sex.
Yeah, yeah.
And it feels more, and you feel more like brother and sister, or maybe even mother and son or something like that.
So just then, best friends, yeah.
Yeah, but more than best friends, you start to feel like family. And then there is a kind of innate incest taboo which kicks in and goes, whoa, don't want to have sex with that person.
And not a sexy porn
way too one. Close.
An actual proper, like,
no,
I
actual,
don't want to do this.
I don't want to do this. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And so real aversion can kick in. And you have to unravel that and get back to being lovers again, rather than, you know, these bezzy friends
see
one another cutting their toenails and
And all that sort of stuff.
And
yeah,
stuff
I think
like
that. I mean, if I'm allowed to say, sometimes I feel like over familiarity
breeds contempt.
Is that the phrase?
Yeah, and revulsion.
Oh dear.
To be honest,
and revulsion. I mean, and so that's why, you know, I may have made this mistake in previous relationships where you sort of think, oh, you know, we're going out, like it's fine, like I can just walk around like naked or whatever. So, but you kind of got to keep
close
a bit of that mystery.
Close the lavatory door.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff.
Close
yeah,
it.
I think that's an important part of that. Okay, fascinating stuff. What about this then? Is my partner too nice? Do you hear that a lot?
Yeah, the idea, do I just like bad boys? That sounds like somebody who's trying to find a reason for what they're feeling. The idea that you're only attracted to people who are going to hurt you, well, some people are, because that's what they know, because that's what they've always had. But she has been attracted to this man. She still is in lots of ways. And so I think that's the important thing. The attraction is there. They are a couple. And all the other stuff. I mean, it's just extraneous noise, really.
I think that's very interesting, is that, you know, you've found this guy attractive, you had all this stuff, and then suddenly you're like, could I just be one of those people who just prefers bad boys? I don't know. I don't think so. It's very interesting, though. Bad boys might be something we want to look at in a future episode,
oh, yeah.
I think. That would be fun.
Yeah.
We could
mean,
look, definitely
boys,
look at bad boys.
Bad boys are fun, yeah.
Bad boy, mom, steady, mom, Jesus. Oh. I don't know. But also,
well, no, they're
I want
fun.
To find...
They're fun in a kind of existential way. They're fun to look at, you know, not to look at physically, but I mean, they're fun to examine, not examine
yes,
physically.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, fucking hell. Yeah, I do. I think
language.
So. Do you know what you mean? Yeah, sorry. Okay. But that makes me think, because the thing is, I'm thinking about that, but then I think, oh, we've covered daddy issues. If we do bad boys, like what can we talk about women? What are some of the stereotypes about types of women you can date? Because we've done sort of types of men, you know, like I said, daddy issues, if we're going to talk about bad boys. But I'm trying to think, what are they?
Cougars?
That's the one. We'll do that.
Our next question,
if you're ready.
Yeah.
Our next question is this. I have depression and anxiety that I take medication for. I've met people who I really liked, but I worry about when I should tell them or what they'll think if they find out. I get anxious to meet them and they think I'm pulling away and then one of us ends things. I'm scared to get into new relationships. When should I tell someone new?
Oh, that's really sweet and sad, isn't it? But lots and lots and lots of people take medication for depression. They do. And the chances are when you tell somebody, they'll also say, yeah, so do I. Because there's a lot of it about. So that's not something that I would, you know, expect you listener to be particularly worried about. It sounds like you're a little bit shy. And which is difficult, or that you might have overshared at some point, because sometimes people on the first date start telling the other person everything about themselves. And, oh, I've had this really terrible problem with depression and, you know, I'm not very good company. And, you know, they say things, they blurt it all out. And then, of course, the other person thinks, oh, this sounds like hard work, and they don't have a second date. So I think you just get to know somebody because information about your lives comes out gradually, doesn't it, when you're talking. And, you know, one day it might just be appropriate to say, well, you know, I take medication for depression. It, when it's appropriate to say that. But I mean, I don't think there's a rule that says, oh yeah, fifth date, you can talk about it. It might be that the relationship's going quite slowly and you're keeping it on a very superficial level and you're just talking about fun things for a long time. Or it may be that it gets deeper more quickly. But, you know, it can be difficult to gauge, but I certainly wouldn't blurt everything out at once. I'd let it all out gradually. Not because there's a stigma around mental health, but because you can frighten somebody off just by being intense.
Yeah, and you can frighten yourself.
Which is nothing to do with... Yeah.
By you think, oh, no, I shouldn't have given away too much. You know, in turn, because you will then fear that you might fear you're giving away too much when actually they're cool with it, but you might get into your own head about it. I kind of wish this question had a bit more information because I wonder whether, you know, it's how the depression and anxiety present themselves for this particular person, because it depends on how it affects you. Because if it's the kind of thing where you get a few dates down the line, you start being anxious to see them at all, or you're not yourself around them and that sort of thing, then, you know, maybe that's what they're worried about and that's what they're afraid of. So it'd be interesting to know how it affects them and why they think that would be bad for these relationships. Because these people find you great as well. And it sounds like you have several dates with them. So I don't think it necessarily
needs to be said
anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, everybody is at some time has some sort of depression. Everybody has some sort of anxiety at some time. And I think you can let those things define you. And, you know, it's almost as if they think, whoever this is, thinks they have to confess to these things. And really, you don't. You know, you're not defined by them. They are parts of you that pop up from time to time. And there are ways of working with them. So that's the other thing. It's not just medication that controls depression and anxiety. There are other ways of doing it too, which might be worth exploring.
Yeah, there you go. Wonderful. Mm. Right. Well, guys, that's all we have time for. And I just wanted to say again, a big thank you to everyone in this series for being so brilliant and fab and continue to support the podcast. If you're enjoying it, then please do give us a rating on iTunes or Spotify. I have a rating system now. Wherever you're listening to this now, please follow us on Instagram. We're at Real Sex Ed Pod, Twitter as well. And most importantly, tell someone. But there's nothing more powerful than the word of mouth. So that's your homework for this week. Maybe tell someone about the podcast, get them listening as well. And we'll get their thoughts on bisexuality and all that good fun stuff. Mum, thank you as ever for giving us your unrivaled wisdom. Thank you.
Thank you, Diggory.
That's very kind. And we'll see you next week for some more real sex education. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hat Trick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.